Hey, everybody, it's Tommy Canale, and welcome back to Before the Lights podcast, the show that tells you how they made their mark. He was a writer for the Chicago Tribune that reported on Western travel. He is currently the executive director of the John Wayne Birthplace Museum, located in Winterset, Iowa. The museum is the largest diversified exhibit of John Wayne artifacts in existence. Let's bring in Brian Downs. Brian, welcome to the show.
Tommy, I've been looking forward to this. Good to hear from you.
You as well. You have a love of Westerns and grew up in the era of the Lone Ranger and how the West was won. Tell me, my listeners, what were some of those Old West characters you gravitated to?
Of course, John Wayne, from an early age. I think I first saw him on the big screen in a theater with my dad about 1959. It was a movie called The Horse Soldier, and I was hooked immediately.
Well, speaking of that, then, since we're talking about the museum, and I'm going to do some more about your background, but what did you think of John Wayne when you first saw him on a big screen?
I know exactly what I thought. He reminded me so much of an army captain who lived down the street from us. Kind of rough and gruff, but protective. You're kind of happy to have him in the neighborhood. And we had our own John Wayne in our about two doors down, so I could relate to him immediately. And I think something like that goes for a lot of people. They can relate, his relatability.
Yes, he was my father's favorite Western actor as well. And I can remember, and I'm sure you remember these, but as a kid, not only watching John Wayne movies with my dad, but watching the movie called They Call Me Trinity. Do you remember that?
I remember it well. Yes, I do.
Yeah, I think there was two or three of them, wasn't there?
Trinity, They Call Me Trinity. Trinity is my name. I don't recall the other. I think I'm on the right track.
Yeah, those two brothers were hysterical. I can remember laughing with my dad on those two guys. Brian, tell me, what are your feelings of Westerns today?
Occasionally a good one comes along. I hate to go back to Lonesome Dove, but that was magnificent, but that's dated now. I think that might be 30 years old. There was one with Tom Hanks, kind of an offbeat Western called, I believe it's News of the Day. And he was a fellow who traveled around in a wagon with newspapers to remote communities. And his business was simply reading newspaper articles aloud, which sounds so strange to us, but people were starved for news in those days, and a lot of them were illiterate, and that was their entertainment, their link to the outside world. Excellent movie. I'm trying to think of another that stands out. You have to go back quite a bit to get real classics, but there have been some pretty brutal modern-day Westerns and take place in our day and age, but I think most of them nowadays, they kind of lack the heroics, and that's where, that's what's missing.
How did you start producing Buffalo Bill style Wild West shows in the Midwest?
I don't remember when I first encountered the legendary Buffalo Bill Cody, but, John Lennon said of, Elvis Presley, he said before Elvis, there was nothing. And the same could be said of Western entertainment before Buffalo Bill was nothing. He was the gold standard as far as taking the unknown West to Eastern audiences, not only Eastern audiences, but around the world, around the English-speaking world, all over Europe. In Buffalo Bill's day, he was the most famous American of his time. So it's just the idea of trying to bring those days back to life. And that we managed to do with Stagecoach and Indians and trick riders and ropers and brass band playing old time music. And it was my chance to be John Ford making a movie.
How long did you do those?
I think about a dozen years.
Okay.
Maybe 80 performances. It wasn't my full time job. It was a summer part time gig that I really enjoyed. And not even a job. It was just for sheer fun.
We talked about John Wayne, and we're talking about the Birthplace Museum that you're at, but you wrote to him in 1977 and asked him for an interview, which he accepted. And you got to know him to the point where your name is in his address book that is on display at the museum. Were you shocked to see your name in it?
I didn't know that address book existed. I know I was expected, but that was, how many years? Maybe 40 years after the fact. That I saw the actual date book. It's part of our museum collection. And I had really forgot. I remembered the year, but I certainly didn't remember the date. But, it wasn't anything like, it was just an old time date book. You know, it was handwritten. And that's how he planned his activities.
When you went down to see him, were you intimidated by him first, or were you excited?
I was really nervous when I got to his door, and he did not answer the door. In fact, I couldn't find the front door to the house. It was kind of a gated community and very narrow on the front at the street side. And so I finally saw a little narrow passageway on the side. So I took that path and walked into his kitchen. And there was a Mexican cook to greet me, and she directed me to the patio. He was taking care of some other business in the house, so I had to wait about 10 minutes or so. But yes, completely intimidated when he stepped out on the patio. But I have to say that melted so fast. 5 or 10 minutes, he was just an ordinary fella. Very, very easy to talk to.
After spending a day with him, Brian, what type of person did you find John Wayne to be?
Incredibly genuine. Incredibly warm. He was curious, and in the days since, I found that most intelligent people I've encountered were those who were curious. They ask questions as much as answer them, and he was genuinely interested in what a big city newspaper was like, and interested in how I came to seek him out. He was certainly practiced at that point. He was he just turned 70 years old, so he had been he talked to many journalists and would be journalists over the years, and he discovered really fast that I was not seasoned at all. And he said, have you done any of these profiles before? I said, no, sir, you're the first. I think he had every right to excuse. Show me to the door at that point, because a very busy guy, you know, with a huge life and lots of interest. But he had, he took pity on me, I think, and he gave me a couple of exclusives. One was his feelings on mandatory retirement at age 65, which he was against, and he gave me a couple of personal tidbits that wound up in our newspaper gossip columns. And then later on, at my request, I asked him to write an article on the Panama Canal treaties, which he supported, which he did. So we had a really great working relationship. I was kind of a mouthpiece for him in a big Midwestern newspaper. And I could never say, I wouldn't boast and say we were great friends, but we were absolutely friendly.
Listeners, Brian has been nice enough to send me a bunch of material from the John Wayne Birthplace Museum, which I have visited in September of 2022. And one of them is a black and white photo of Brian with John Wayne, and put it in with on the link page that you guys can take a look at. On this material that you sent me, Brian, one of the things that I really think kind of sums up of who John Wayne type of person he was, there's a story about him being in Moab, Utah, that Scott Iman, who was the keynote speaker for the grand opening of the museum, told about when he walked into a bar and sat down, a guy next to him bought him a beer and had no idea who John Wayne was.
And can you imagine somebody, especially out west, not knowing who John Wayne was? But I think that can be said. There's a lot of cultural figures nowadays that are huge, and I really don't have a clue who they are. Just about anybody in country music, which I love, but modern country, I just don't know I don't know the players anymore. So, yeah, it is possible. Hard to believe, but possible.
Yeah, and the story goes on to say that, the guy did not watch movies, and he said, I'm a big actor, and he said, well, I've never heard of you. And those two drank beer for the rest of the day on John Wayne. The guy had no idea he was sitting next to one of the biggest actors in the country at that time. So I love that story.
I just have to guess that Wayne found that very amusing and loved the evening that much more.
And from what I understand, he never pretended that he was above any other human, into saying a lot about him, because he was recognized by Congress on May 26, 1979, and awarded the Congressional Gold Medal, which is the nation's highest civilian honor. I think that just goes to a testament to speak of who he was.
He was very, very humble, and he just didn't see things through the prism of class or social status. The automobile that you saw when you visited our museum was his station wagon, not a movie star car, but it was outfitted to accommodate his height. And the fellow who provided that car to our museum was paving the street out in front of Wayne's Newport Beach home. And Wayne came out just curious, watching the boys do their work and, you know, spreading the tar and hot day. And he said, "You guys take a break?" He said, "They said, we'd like to come in and let's have sandwiches." Just curious about everybody. And anybody who knows him says the same thing. He didn't differentiate between people who was important and who wasn't. Everybody was important. And I think that's because of his Iowa roots.
Brian, is the younger generation getting exposed to John Wayne? Is the torch being passed down, so to speak?
Well, that is something we always have to be concerned about. And it's extremely important and valuable to us that so many of the cable stations, Turner Classic Movies and the Western Channel and the Cowboy Channel, they continue to play him. And going back to Buffalo Bill, he died in 1917. There's nobody alive today that has firsthand memories of him. It has not been for a while. But he has a museum in Cody, Wyoming. It's 7 acres under one roof, and it covers the entire West, all aspects of the American West, from firearms to paintings to Buffalo Bill himself. And in the summertime, you can't get in that place. It's so packed in the July and August. And people have an idea who Buffalo Bill is, a kind of an impression of him, but they don't know about him, but they're curious, and then they pack the place annually. So we are concerned, of course, but they're just a handful of American icons that I think are going to be around for a long, long time.
So tell me then, how does a writer for the Chicago Tribune for 35 years get asked to move to Iowa, as you were hired by the John Wayne Birthplace Museum in 2008?
Well, you know, I had that show that I presented out here for John Wayne's 100th birthday in 2007. I thought it'd be a perfect fit, and it was. We had such a good time doing it. And the town was packed with, an estimated 20,000 people were in town. All John Wayne's children were here, his grandchildren, about 30 members of the Wayne family. And we had such a blast doing that weekend entertainment. And then it was just a couple months later that the board of directors of the John Wayne Birthplace decided that it's time to have a full-time director to lead the development of the museum. And they called me, and I didn't believe it. I actually recommended other people because I had zero experience in museums and zero experience with fundraising. But they insisted on a second interview, and I think my daughter turned the tide for me. She made me decide. She said, "Dad, you don't want to be an old man in Chicago." And I thought about that, and she was absolutely right. So it's just that easy. That's the whole story right there. They didn't mind experience. They wanted enthusiasm and passion. And I think they got it modestly. I can say modestly.
You've led efforts for the new building, which took 7 years to get done as it opened in May 23rd of 2015. But what was the old museum building like?
Well, it wasn't really. It was a small gift shop, which was actually a small home in the neighborhood and the original home where John Wayne was born. And that little house was unmarked and unnoticed forever. Because when John Wayne was here, there was not much interest, but with his passing, there became a great deal of interest in the house. So the city leaders decided that we ought to buy that home and open it for tours, which is how it happened. And it was that way for probably 30 years or so, 25, 30 years, and very popular attraction. But it was a stretch to call it a museum. It was filled mostly with a few little personal items, but a lot of collectible items and coffee mugs and lunch buckets and pictures and that kind of thing. But still a hit. They're a very popular summertime destination.
Is it true then that since grammar school you wanted to be a museum guy?
Yeah, I can say that I love museums. And I had a little kind of a little museum in my bedroom. I'd go on trips and go to Lincoln's tomb, for instance.
Oh yeah, been there.
Edwards, South Dakota, and just collect everything. I just been this my own little personal museum. So not thinking of it as a career, but I'm certainly fascinated with them. And before I moved to Iowa, and since, in fact, I've written about plenty of museums: Will Rogers and Buffalo Bill and Jesse James and all the big Western players. I visited all their museums and homes and grave sites. And so Americana was always my thing.
Sounds like your house is a museum.
It is. We had, there's a Western singer, Red Steagall, came to visit. He performed at one of our birthday celebrations, and I've had him over to the house for a private visit. And he says, Brian, he said, this place just wraps its arms around you. Of course, I had a couple of pictures on the wall that I got up really fast.
Well, the front of the museum for the John Wayne birthplace has a 7.5-foot statue of the Duke that was donated by the Wayne family on his 100th birthday. The museum has three sections: John Wayne the American, John Wayne the Family Man, and John Wayne the Actor, that includes a 24-seat theater, and the seats are from the Grauman's Chinese Theater in Hollywood, California. The collections include his 1972 Pontiac station wagon that Brian was talking about, and where the roof was raised. There are set panels from The Shootist and the original Irish horse cart from The Quiet Man. What I find fascinating this, Brian, is he starred in almost 160 films, produced a number of award-winning movies from the 50s and 70s, and only one Academy Award, which was for True Grit in 1969.
Well, and that's a huge body of work, and it's not boastful to say that John Wayne was the greatest movie star of all time. And you can, there can be disagreement on, was he the finest actor? But as far as movie star, and we say that as a 50 years a leading man, tickets sold. It was just amazing that a career is lasting that long, as he kind of shot to the top early and stayed there. He never budged. Yeah, and he had a wonderful remark that I embraced. He said, nobody likes my pictures but the public. And so the Academy, the arts community. So he became a star, and not in New York and Chicago and Los Angeles, but he became a star in small theaters when he did those serial pictures. And some of those early movies didn't last more than 30 minutes. So he was a star in the rural area. Rural America knew him much better than urban America for the first 10 years of his career. So he was, you know, great pictures, and a lot of people, his people he worked with would say he should have had an Academy Award for The Searchers, should have had one for The Shootist. He was nominated for Sands of Iwo Jima. It's never a question. The people embraced him even when the Academy did not. But they did eventually. And there's other major stars, that huge stars in their day. Clark Gable never had an Academy Award. James Cagney, I don't think Humphrey Bogart ever did. So it's not the mark of true stardom to have the Academy Award. It's a great honor, but you can be a major star without one.
Are there items you still like to get to add to the museum?
I would love to have it's called a Mitchell 35mm movie camera. And you know it when you see it. It's the old movie camera with the Mickey Mouse ears on top to hold the film. It's on a tripod with wooden legs. And that's something I would really love to see in our museum, because nothing shouts Hollywood like an old-time camera like that. But we know right now there's some pieces out there that we would like to have but don't need at this point. But we kind of feel that when the big collectors go to their reward, that their children or grandchildren are going to be offering things to us. And at this point, we've hardly purchased a single item. Everything's been donated or on long-term loan. But after we get in a better position, when we've satisfied our lenders for building the museum, then we can consider making purchases. But at the same time, we don't want to overpay, because we have to be very careful of our donor dollars.
Well, if there's a listener out there that knows where one of those cameras is laying around, reach out to me or reach out to Brian. I'll put a contact for him in the show notes as well. Let's see if we can't find a camera to get in the museum that you're looking for.
You can give my email and phone number to anybody you like.
Will do. Is there a guest you would like to give a personal tour to the museum of?
Well, I did. We had Maureen O'Hara was here in 2013. That
okay.
was a huge honor. She was here for 4 days, and even in the heyday, even when in their prime, John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara's prime, she was probably the one performer most closely linked to him. So close that a lot of people assumed they were married, just because they were great friends and did so many great pictures together. The people from John Wayne's era, sad to say, are very hard to find. We've had Claude Jarman Jr. played John Wayne's son in Rio Grande, John Wayne and Lorino Harris' son. He's been here. Robert Carradine from the Cowboys, he's been here. Of course, Maureen O'Hara, but, and I'm neglecting somebody. I'm smaller players, people who are on the set, stunt people, but major stars, John Wayne, that was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. He died in 1977, so his contemporaries are either gone before he was or leaving us fast. But I cannot think of a major star who was in a picture with him that's not been here.
Has his family members been there too?
Every one of his children have been here. His widow, Pilar, a lot of people thought they were divorced, but when he died, they were still married. He was separated from her, but she had been here. And all seven of his children and a ton of grandchildren. They've all been here one time or another.
As you mentioned, his parents' house is next to the museum. It's a modest four-room home. He was born on May 26, 1907, and weighed 13 pounds. His father, Clyde, was a pharmacist. His mother, Mary, basically went by Molly, was a telephone operator. I'm sure there's listeners out there that don't even know what a telephone operator is. I say use Google to figure out what that was.
Yes.
Brian, tell me, how much of that home is original?
The entire home is original. It's intact. It's all every original. The floors, the floorboards you're walking in, the stained glass windows, the woodwork, it's entirely original. It's been, the wallpaper is not original. That was a long time ago, but it's been duplicated from the original as best we could. But at any place you put your feet or your hands, you're going to be touching something that was there with the little baby, Marion Morrison was walking around. We assume he took his first steps in there.
Is it true he was nicknamed the Duke at 9 years old after his beloved dog?
That is correct. Yes, he used to stroll to school with his dog, and he'd go by the firehouse in Glendale, California. Dog's name was Duke, so the fireman would say, "Here comes Big Duke and Little Duke." And he liked that name much better than his birth name, Marion. That's Marion with a M-A-R-I-O-N, which was a common boy's name in those days. He was named after a grandfather who fought in the Civil War. But Marion didn't fit a big strapping kid with aspirations of being a mighty man someday.
Tell me about the personal coffee mugs that he gave to each cast and crew member on every film.
Well, that started in the 1940s. I can't tell you the name of the movie, but it was a World War II picture. But it was kind of a souvenir gift you would give out to everybody, the electricians, the cameraman, the director, all the stunt people, everybody who worked on his picture got one, and they were a gold-handled mug that actually didn't hold a lot of coffee, but they were a heavy ceramic, and it would say, he'd have the engraving on the back, "Good luck, Duke," and then each one would have a little different, sometimes a little, almost a caricature of the movie, little hand-painted mugs from a movie scene. Quiet Man, for instance, has a Celtic cross. They're all slightly different, but the same style. The mug itself is kind of a blank, but they were they had the gold handles on them, and they were treasured keepsakes, and they go for as high as $2,500 for a coffee mug.
Do you have some at the museum?
We do. We have. We think we're going to have soon on display. We may have the entire set, but right now there's a dozen on display, and they're cleverly displayed in a case where there's a mirror in the back of the case where you can see them front and back.
Listeners, I told you I have been there and visited. I recommend if you're in the Midwest area or if you're within a drive looking for somewhere to go for the day, looking to go somewhere, stop on vacation, go to this place. It's located 205 South John Wayne Drive in Winterset, Iowa. It's 35 miles southwest of Des Moines. If you want to go to the website, I'll put a link in the show notes. It's johnwaynebirthplace.museum. That's johnwaynebirthplace.museum. And you can become a member for only $55. That runs January through December. Brian, tell the listeners, what can they get for being a member?
You will get a nice elegant folder with a gold embossed statue or picture of our statue on the front of it. You will get a color photo of John Wayne. You will get a membership card. You will get two tickets to the museum. And you will get our quarterly newsletter mailed to members before anybody else sees them. And that brings you up to, that will bring visitors up to date on new collection pieces, celebrity profiles, and then our major event that happens every year on John Wayne's birthday, John Wayne birthday celebration. And it gives the update on that before they're, before it goes out publicly.
Speaking of that celebration, it's May 24th, 25th of this year, 2024. And I see you're featuring Writers in the Sky this year.
Yeah, they are. Anybody who remembers a Disney movie, Toy Story, they're the fellows, the quartet, sang Woody's Roundup. And they're Grand Ole Opry members for 30-some years. They're won Grammy Awards. Or they've been working hard promoting the cowboy way, as they say, for all over the country, all over the world for decades. But they were here for John Wayne's 100th birthday, and they're making a return appearance. And then we're also going to have, it's going to be, it's designated, designed as a salute to John Ford, the director who basically invented John Wayne more than anybody else. And we're going to be playing The Searchers in our local theater. We're going to be playing She Wore a Yellow Ribbon. We're going to have a benefit dinner and auction. And it's rumored that one of those coffee cups may be in our auction. We had a duplicate, so that's but we, that's not for certain yet. But we sell paintings, we commemorative guns, statues, and we don't know that yet, what is in there yet. That all comes in the next couple of months. But it's a popular night, and the headliners are going to be Writers in the Sky. We're also going to have a fly-in breakfast at our local airport, and that was born last year when we flew the military films, and we were shocked at the success of that because it's just only 2 miles north of town, and just a wonderful way to kick off the weekend on a Saturday morning to have breakfast when the plane's flying in and out. And that's a growing event. We're also having a 5K run presented by the Winterset Rotary. So it's from Friday night. Opening event is going to be reception at the birthplace. And then closing with the following night with the benefit dinner and auction. It's fun, and we get so many of the same people come back year after year, so we must be doing something right.
Yes, you are. And I wish, listeners, there is more to do in this area than just a museum. And we did not catch this until we were already back home. But the bridges of Madison County are there. The Cedar Bridge that was built in 1883 is featured on the book cover. The entire movie was filmed locally, and many sites are still available to visitors. I wish I would have known that, because my mother and sister and I would definitely would have gone and seen the bridges of Madison County.
Why didn't you ask me?
I didn't even know you then. Or I would have, because we would have stopped. We were looking for a place to stop. We would have went to see that. But tell my listeners about Winterset, Iowa. I understand they got a courthouse from 1876.
Yeah, I love that courthouse. We'd be kind of lost. We wouldn't be the same town without it. But I look at that courthouse with the 1876 date on it. General Custer was still alive. He still had his hair in 1876. Wild Bill Hickok was still playing cards in 76. The Jesse James gang was on a rampage. And if those Stones could talk, you know, the times that they saw, when you think of, let's say we were just kind of fresh off the frontier at that point in 76, in Iowa anyway. And it was, we were jumping off point for so many people to pressing in the western direction. So we're west of the Mississippi, so we can be as west as any other town wants to be. And I'd like to point out that beyond just our museum, you get a whole downtown here that was very familiar to John Wayne's family when he was growing up, when he was just a lad. The same buildings and the same. I live on a house, or on a street rather, that has houses from the 1880s in pristine condition. So it's a very lovely heart of America community. And of course, you mentioned the bridges, and we're just finished off the Iowa caucuses. So anybody who thought they had a shot at being president came to our, they practically come to your door because it's very up close and personal. All the major candidates were here, as they've been doing since the 1970s. So we're kind of the epicenter of the world until the caucuses are over, then they move on. Mm-hmm. But summertime's our hopping place here.
Well, I tell you what, the next time I come back to that area, I'm going to go by the bridges in Madison County and the courthouse for sure. I
mean, those. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yes.
And it's, the only thing different is the cars on the street and then the pavement. You know, we have so many pictures that you can look at Winterset of 100 years ago, and it's identical. You know, same buildings. We have different people, of course, but it's quite a thing to see. In fact, when I first rolled in here late one night, about 2006 at midnight, it was the dead of winter, and I pulled up to the courthouse where, and I looked out and I thought it was a Hollywood movie set. It was just so beautiful. Mm.
Brian, why do you think John Wayne is still remembered 43 plus years after he passed on July 11th of 1979 and 115 plus years after he was born?
I think he would be shocked that he is still so relevant to the world today and to our culture. His family could not believe it. They comment on it now. Daughter Aisha had the my favorite quote of all. She said, "My dad always knew how much he was worth for as a motion picture star. He knew his box office appeal. He knew his value to the studios. But," she said, "never in his lifetime did he know how much he was loved." And that was a very touching and telling remark. The American people took him to their hearts early on. He was his relatability. And another word I like is aspirational. He never thought of himself as a hero. He said, "I played the man I wish I was." And he portrayed the people who built this country in a very positive light. So he endures because he's what we want America to be. And so many of the elements in his character were very true to the people who built the country, to the people who forged trails. And they're builders. They're builders and doers. And that kind of spirit is not as strong as it was 100 years ago, but the longing is there. We aspire to be that. And there's a nostalgia is a big part of it, too.
Yeah. How big do you think the Duke would be in today's world?
That's hard to say. It would be so different. He did not like the direction movies were going in his day when we met in 1977. He said the writing is not there. The stories are not there. And stories that would touch people. You have to look hard to find a real story in modern movies today. You know, between the science fiction and the special effects and all, sometimes they're hard to watch. They're hard on the eyes. They're hard on the ears. You don't have any opportunity to absorb a story or to build characters. And I don't know. I think if today's audiences would get more of that product, then they would embrace it. But they're just not producing those stories. It's all money. It's not, the art doesn't seem to be there. The special effects art is certainly there, and that's never been better. But when you watched a Wayne picture, when the cavalry came over the hill, they were doing it. It wasn't CGI. Anything you saw, it was much more realistic. And we're kind of disconnected from realism now. So that's a very good question. Would he be a big star? He'd be a different kind of star, but I think I'm trying to think of somebody to compare him to, and you just can't. Mm-hmm. And you can't come up with great. Hollywood had tremendous stars in the past, but they're pretty much forgotten, except for Wayne.
What's your favorite Wayne film?
My favorite movie, period, of all movies ever made is The Quiet Man, because I'm very partial to the romance and the sentimentality of that. And I embrace my own Irish heritage. If we take that away, I can't have a favorite. I have to be She Wore Yellow Ribbon or True Grit, something like that. Other people are going to tell you McClintock. You know, they're going to,
right.
You can't tell somebody what their favorite movie. You can't tell them what's the best movie. The best movie is the one you like the most.
This is true. Is he the ultimate cowboy?
In his era, absolutely. Before that, Buffalo Bill Cody, as a performer. Tom Mix was in between there. He was huge in his day. But nobody had a career as long as Wayne's. All these fellas were major, huge stars. Lone Arm, Roy Rogers was a huge star. But not remembered and not for as many years.
I know you said his family and his children have all been there. Are they taken back by how much their father has made an impact still in that area?
I think absolutely. I think they're as surprised as anybody. And the only person who would be more surprised would be John Wayne himself. But they take their responsibility very seriously. They have an exhibit in Fort Worth, Texas. They have a lot of things we don't have, because that's their dad. But movie wardrobe, they have more of that than we do in family pictures and things like that. But I think they see it as a responsibility, that this is their duty to maintain their father's legacy. And it's a huge legacy, and it's got to be kept in the right hands. We are here in Winterset, we are a historical site. That's how we operate as a cultural and a destination as far as a place. Fort Worth certainly has a lot more people than we do. It's a major western city, but we're in the heart of the country, and that's part of the story too.
Listeners, I'm going to ask you to do something for me to help pass the torch along of who John Wayne was. If you know John Wayne, then great, because you can already do this. I need you to pick out whatever your favorite film is and grab somebody younger than you and sit down and watch a movie and expose them to John Wayne and let them take it from there. If you don't know who John Wayne is in The Duke, then I challenge you to do this. Go find The Quiet Man or one of these major movies that John Wayne was in, True Grit, The Shootist, whatever it is that you want to find, and watch a movie and get exposed to it, and then go tell one person and see if we continue to push this thing forward. Because I'm telling you, from somebody who grew up and whose father loved John Wayne, it's an icon in Americana that we can't just let go to rest.
That's brilliant.
Thank you so much. And I want to thank you for your time and coming on the show and sending me this great information on it. I enjoyed reading it. And I'll tell you this much. I am going to be watching a John Wayne movie here soon, because I'm re-energized to watch another film.
Tommy, this has been so much fun, and your questions are magnificent.
Thank you so much.
Challenging.
Good. That's what I want. I want it to be challenging and enlightening for our listeners. So that's a great thing. Why I Love Her, from the album John Wayne, America, Why I Love Her. You ask me why I love her? Well, give me time and I'll explain. Have you seen a Kansas sunset or an Arizona rain? Have you drifted on a bayou down Louisiana way? Have you watched the cold fog drifting over San Francisco Bay? From Alaska's gold to the Everglades, from the Rio Grande to the Maine, my heart cries out. My pulse runs fast as the might of her domain. You ask me why I love her? I've a million reasons why. My beautiful America, beneath God's wide, wide sky. It was performed by John Wayne and written by John Mitchum in 1973. I want to thank Brian Downs, the executive director of the John Wayne Birthplace Museum, for being on the show today. And before we go, folks, I want to tell you about a podcast docuseries in support of Native American rights of the harsh and unfair treatment of the indigenous community. I did it along with filmmaker Antonino D'Ambrosio. It's entitled A Heartbeat and a Guitar, Johnny Cash and the Making of Bitter Tears. I'll put a link in the show notes where you can find the entire docuseries to check it out. And that's going to do it for this episode of Before the Lights. And until next time, everybody, I salute a chin chin.